Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I don't know if you are a Pac-12 fan or an Oregon State fan. Either way, you should be following what Nick Daschle of the Oregonian is writing and reporting about. Nobody does Oregon State better than Daschle. I had the great pleasure this morning to read a piece that he's been working on. I retweeted it. It is a piece about a kid who is an Oregonian who essentially decided, without high school football being played in the state of Oregon, that he would go to the state of Texas to play a high school season. He is now committed to Oregon State. He's coming back home where you can all see him play. Here to talk about Tyson Thomas is Nick Daschle of the Oregonian. Really nice job on that piece, Nick. I thought you really humanized the family and a pretty complex issue.
Yeah, they seem pretty genuine about it. I know there's, they talked as much about, hearing people from the outside, calling them entitled and, why are you doing this? Why are you pulling your kid from our school and that sort of stuff? But, in the end, you got to do what's best for your kids. And in this case, the parents and the kid all thought that his best chance of landing in college football somewhere was to play a senior season in high school somewhere. And there was no guarantee it was going to happen in Oregon. So they made the move to Texas for 3 months and played high school football in Austin.
That experience, he got a chance to play football, a chance to be away from home. Probably had a chance. Did dad go alone with him and mom stayed back here with other siblings, correct?
Correct, yeah. Dad went and his cousin. The kid and the dad lived in an apartment down there.
I actually think there's some, as a parent who's got a kid who's a high school senior, there is something appealing about having some time with your kid. I wonder, did they talk at all about sort of the byproduct of the two of them being out there in Texas?
Well, mom did say, the apartment was 600 square feet, and he said that, there were times they got pretty annoyed with each other. It's a pretty tight core. I mean, you can imagine being in, with your daughter in close quarters for 3 straight months. You probably similar things. But yeah, I mean, I got the impression that he really enjoyed being around his son. It's not the last, but it's the last chance he's going to have to really spend a lot of quality time with him. I mean, Tyson grew up on the football field with his dad because he coached at Westland and Lake Ridge. And his last stop was at Crescent Valley when Talanoa Hufanga was a senior. And that's, that's where, Tyson got a good chance to see a really good player. And, he knows what a really good player at his position looks like.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian covers Oregon State. I think about a kid like, Brian Grant's son who ends up as a preferred walk-on, Jaden Grant, goes to Oregon State, could have had a scholarship at maybe a smaller school, but said, I want to go to Oregon State, and becomes such a good story, was a playmaker this last season. Now you look at, another kid who is a local kid, Tyson Thomas, who will also be a preferred walk-on. How important are those preferred walk-ons as you talk to Oregon State about getting those guys like Jaden Grant, now Tyson Thomas?
Well, they're always important to your program. Particularly you're looking for, guys that can play special teams. And you're going to hit a few, you're going to hit a few singles and doubles along the way with walk-ons. I mean, Oregon State has a history of turning, some walk-ons into scholarship athletes. You mentioned Jaden Grant, I never can say his last name, Noose, the right guard, Oregon State. He's been a scholarship guy the last 2 years. He walked on for 3 years. You know, they typically they have a special teams two guy, kicker or punter, that they turn into a scholarship guy at some point. So, I mean, the opportunity is there to turn yourself into, you know, to earn some money playing football at Oregon State if you can make it. I think this year in particular, and I'm going to ask Jonathan about this tomorrow, but I think it looks like they're adding more preferred walk-ons this year than maybe years past. And I'm kind of thinking that, you know, they're thinking that maybe there's some diamonds in the rough out there. They didn't get to see, you know, a lot of these guys didn't play senior year in high school, and you know, they might find a couple of guys that maybe they wouldn't normally get had they been able to play their senior year. And maybe Tyson Thomas is one of those guys that, you know, kind of flew under the radar around here, but he actually got a senior year and people saw him play a little bit.
Nick Daschle of the Oregonian covers Oregon State. I know that recruiting is really disjointed now, that there isn't one signing day, but what is on the horizon now for Oregon State as you sort of look at Jonathan Smith's recruiting?
Well, I mean, as soon as the early signing period came and went in December, this period here is really more about, you know, landing more preferred walk-ons and really turning your attention to the 22 class. I mean, they're already, you know, starting to make offers to some of those guys. And I believe tomorrow in the signing class, they'll probably have the four transfers that they were able to get between in December and January. I think they're going to be announced, and then there'll be a half a dozen, then six to eight walk-ons tomorrow. I don't think there's any other, because this is going to be a small class, but yeah, you know, right now the concentration is on the class of 22. What they're looking, you know, what their needs are, who they might want to go after, you know, who are some reaches, things like that.
I would live in the portal if I were Jonathan Smith. I would all transfers, open arms, Father Flanagan, bring me every lost cause, every player who doesn't fit at some other program. I want to get a look at first. Is that possible, or is everybody living in the portal?
Yeah, I think they are living in the portal, but it's just, you know, it's tougher to get, you know, the guys that would fit. I mean, you can't just go out and, you know, willy-nilly sign these guys. They got to fit your culture. They got to, you know, buy into what you're doing. And, you know, some of them just aren't going to – they're just not going to fit. And, you know, I think they've been really going hard trying to find a defensive tackle, and there's been some of those in the portal and haven't got any of those. But yeah, I think that's a place that everybody is starting to, you know, really kind of take a long look at. But for Oregon State, it's important because, I mean, the odds of them landing a, you know, five-star guy or even, you know, a lot of four-star guys, is those odds are pretty long. So they can get a few of these guys, and the four that they're bringing in, they all had reputations before they, you know, when they signed out of high school. So, you know, if one or two of those guys can turn out to be, you know, the four-star guys that they were in high school, that's going to be a pretty big win for Oregon State.
Before I cut you loose, let's talk about the quarterback position. Is this a two-player race? Is it a wide-open race? How do you see this as spring football's on the horizon? We've got, you know, one quarterback who, you know, has undergone a surgery and no clear leader, at least leaving the season. But how big is the field here?
No, it's three players. It's Jebbia, it's Chance Nolan, it's Ben Gulbrandsen. And in the spring, it'll be Nolan and Gulbrandsen, because Jebbia really won't be able to do much in the spring, if anything. But once they get into camp in August, I think Jebbia has a leg up because he's got the most experience and he knows the system the best. But I think they're going to take a long look at Gulbrandsen because he's got some real talent. And, you know, I just don't know how far along he is in the system and, you know, if they can trust everything he does. But I know they like him. And I really think it's going to be a three-man race and it's going to go right down, just like it has the first 3 years of Jonathan Smith's tenure. It's going to go right down to the last week of camp before they name a starter. I can guarantee that.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because it's such, you know, like, I look at Jonathan Smith and I think that's such a key position there. You know, in his scheme, he's supposed to be the quarterback guy, the offense guy. What do you know about Gulbranson, who we haven't really seen?
He's taller than, you know, the other guys, and he's got the biggest arm. I mean, he's got an arm like, somewhat like, you know, Jake Luton. You know, he's not, you know, overly mobile, but none of, you know, outside of that hasn't been a big trait of an Oregon State quarterback under Jonathan, other than Chance Nolan, but he's kind of breaking the mold there a little bit. But I think they just like his arm, and I think he's pretty smart, and you know, he came out of high school with some, you know, with a pretty good resume, and I'm just curious to see what he looks like this spring when he gets a lot of, you know, good looks with the ones and, you know, even the twos, and see what he can do and see how he, you know, matches up with some of the receivers he'd be working with.
Let's go back again to the original reason we brought you on the show. Again, we're talking to Nick Daschle of the Oregonian. You know, you've got Tyson Thomas, a kid who is an Oregonian who spent, you know, his adolescence in this state and high school years in his state. He's looking at a senior year where he's not going to be able to play football. Family makes a really tough decision and decides dad and son will go to the state of Texas. They'll rent an apartment. Mom and siblings will stay here. I don't think it's for everyone, but I also am left feeling like, look, it worked for this family. And you know, they'll probably, I think most kids are going to look back at this year, this last year, and say, gosh, it wasn't the year that I thought it would be. I think a lot of us sat in one place waiting for things to change. And you got a parent and a kid here in this situation who said, you know what? We can do this. Let's go do this. You know, would you do it if it were your kid, Nick Daschle?
No, but I should say probably not. I don't, you know, my kids weren't that much into athletics to begin with, but, you know, if they were, I mean, would I have that conversation? Maybe, but I don't think we would. I mean, as I mentioned to the Thomases, I said, you know, this is kind of like, you know, your RV for the year, your vacation or whatever. This is, you know, and that's kind of, I mean, that's not exactly what it is, but that's, you know, it was about $10,000, and, you know, that's how they chose to spend their money, because they felt like it was an investment in Tyson. And, you know, did it pay off? I mean, who knows? I mean, that door to Oregon State might have opened regardless, because they, you know, he does have some connections at Oregon State, but you know, they did have, he got some offers from schools that, you know, were offering, you know, real scholarship dollars, and that he didn't have before. So I don't know. I mean, I know, you know, we've talked about it. I don't think you would do it. And I don't think I would do it, but I don't have a problem. And one thing I did ask, I said, if he was a junior, would you have done that? And the mom said, no, we would not have done this. This was only because it was a senior year. And he's a different player than he was a year ago. He put on a lot of weight, moving positions, and, you know, they wanted to be able to have colleges see what he could do with his, you know, with a new body, I guess.
You know what? I just think it's a good story. It's interesting, and I think good stories do that. They make us think about families. They make us think about different perspectives. And so, Daschle, I appreciate you telling it. For people who haven't read it, I've tweeted out a link to it. You can find it on Oregon Live. Nick Daschle, I appreciate you, man. Thanks for giving us time.
All right, we'll see you, John.
All right, there he is. Oregon State fans will want to read about Tyson Thomas, who will be showing up as a preferred walk-on. And for parents out there, like, look, I said it months and months and months ago. It's not what I would do for my kid, but I'm also not in a position where my kid is a D1 potential football player. And as I project myself into this situation, as I look at the Thomas family, you know, who I know, I look at it and I go, you know, how do you not do what's in the best interest of your kid when you face that predicament? We all do that on a daily basis. We make decisions that are in the best interest of our family. We're supposed to do that. It's a good story, and it does what good stories do. It makes us think. Leave it here. We'll be right back. I like to say that I'm not superstitious, but I think I am superstitious. I find myself grabbing the same coffee mug if it's available in our cabinets every day. I also, if I'm on a baseball diamond, probably from my time in high school and college playing baseball, even Little League, I step over the lines. I never step on the foul lines. It's bad luck. I also find that I will repeat certain patterns sometimes on the show. For example, and I'm going to break a superstition right now. I find that when we're having a really good show, I don't like to talk about us having a good show. But I feel like from about 12:30 yesterday until right now that the show has just been humming. I thought we had really good guests yesterday, from talking NFL prop bets to talking to Washington State's president, Kirk Schultz. I thought Anna came in studio yesterday and brought good energy into the show. I think the discussion to this point of the show has been really good. Am I messing with a no-hitter, guys? We got a one-hit shutout going, something going on. Should I not be back in the dugout going, hey, guys, playing pretty well today?
It's a little taboo, John, I'll be honest. I'm a little nervous about how it's going to go, but it's all good, yeah. Man. Celebrate the run.
Sometimes when it's really bad, it's also good. You know, it could be what you don't want is just the in-between. So sometimes if it's really bad, then I go, you know what? That was so bad, it was good radio. We've had some cringy interviews over the years. Like one time I had on Travis Outlaw when he was coming right out of high school. He was a Blazers draft pick. And I love Travis Outlaw, one of the nicest NBA players you'd ever meet. But I also think he was right out of high school and he was not used to being interviewed. He'd probably never been on a radio show before. He just got to town in Portland, and I had him on radio. And I should pull the audio up of that interview. It was years and years ago, but I had young Travis Outlaw on the show, and I was warned by the Blazers Media Relations Department. They were like, hey, he's really rough in an interview. And subsequently, I think the interview went about 4 minutes, 5 minutes. He gave one word answers to every single question. I think I asked 23 questions in 4 minutes. You know, it was like that scene in, what is it? Uncle Buck, you know, where, what do you want? What are you doing? You know the scene I'm talking about where he's peppering John Candy and he's got all the answers.
Yeah.
The
kids yeah. Yeah.
Firing the questions at him. I can't remember the exact movie. I think it was Uncle Buck, but basically, you know, John Candy getting peppered by a kid over a grilled cheese sandwich. what is better? Questions and answers. It was Travis Outlaw, but it was so bad that it was memorable. Like I don't find myself talking about the rank and file interview that I did with somebody like Wesley Matthews or Nicholas Batum or someone else. I find myself thinking about Travis Outlaw and how damn hard I had to work in that interview. Judah, were you around when that happened or were you listening?
I think I was in high school and I vaguely remember the week that it happened because you guys would reset it a lot, which was hilarious and I loved it. I don't remember it happening live, but I would love to find that interview again and have you react to it again. That's so good stuff. That's what makes your show and your platform special because you've got so many of those memorable, unforgettable moments like that.
I'm gonna pull up the Uncle Buck clip in the next segment, but I think we went back and counted, and it was a ridiculous number of questions per minute as it went down. So it was just this ridiculous back and forth, you know, what's your favorite animal? A cat, paper or plastic, paper. What's your favorite? It was just back and forth. And
oh,
I finally was
he
like,
said a cat for his favorite animal. That should have
tipped
us off.
I got nothing else. Yeah. I got nothing. Travis, good to have you on the show. Thanks. And then he took off. And I remember looking. I think John Strong was on the board that day. And I remember looking over.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.